warrior, to our hall on this cold and bitter night. Come in and make yourself warm, share the hospitality of our hearth, enjoy a horn of mead and a hearty meal, while we entertain you with tales of mighty armies and heroic deeds from the world of Panathor. Join us in the Tales from the Warrior's Hall.
Now that we're getting comfortable by the fire tonight, we said we were going to have a brief chat about the different factions that can be taken as armies and why anybody would take them, what would bring you to choose that particular race, why you might be drawn to it. You know, do most people choose a race because they find it is something that appeals to them? For me, I am very much a forces of nature, herd kind of person. It's not about money, it's about balance, it's about order. But we'll go into all this as we continue onward.
Yes, indeed. So, tonight, we are looking at, because there are 26 or 27 factions, we've decided to break them down, and Mantic very conveniently given us a way of doing that by putting their factions into three categories: neutral, good, and evil. So tonight we're going to do the neutral, which contains nine factions, which are the forces of nature, and the connected lists to those are Herd, Sylvankin, and Order of the Green Lady, the Kingdoms of Men, with their theme list of League of Rhodia, Ogres, Trident Realms of Neritica, and Halflings.
Go stunties.
So the idea behind neutral is that these guys sort of provide the general populace of the lands. The vast majorities of humans are neutral, with the exception of the Basileans and the Brothermark, who we'll talk about on the good, and the Varangir, who are evil. But the neutral idea is that they are the guys that will fight alongside anybody.
Very easy to ally.
Yes, they are very easy to ally, which in narrative terms means that if you want to start an army and you already have an existing army, if you pick a neutral force, they can ally with either good or evil and allow you to build a second army while still playing games, which is how most of our armies have started.
Mine definitely did, although I never really used my old world stuff because having exploded them, I wasn't so very keen on getting my dark elves out. So obviously I jumped in and picked up Herd. But we'll go into the whys and wherefores that people may have for what they choose. Would you like me to give a little brief summary of how Panathor started and, I don't know how they term them, the old gods as they were before the Celestial Wars, or do you think it's not worthwhile?
I think that's probably something we can go on to in doing the lore when we come to doing our lore episode.
Fine. I shall save the seven old gods for another point. Probably at a point where we look at God War, Time of Light, Anulian Mirror, Time of Ice, Age of Conflict, Flooding of the Abyss, many other bits and pieces that all come up in Tales.
Well, we've yet to plan out these specific lore episodes. At the moment, we're just concentrating on
How to get you started
in Kings of War.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you would like me to take Forces of Nature as a beginning.
Okay. There you go.
Okay, the forces of nature all come under, as we've mentioned, the Green Lady, who is a force that was a Celestian, and there's so much lore goes into the background that we'll not cover any of that. But the idea of this on the whole is that they want balance. They want everything to be at ease with each other. They don't want a dominance of good or evil. And there is a bigger picture. They're not fighting for having land or that kind of thing. They're fighting for a different cause. They're fighting for the Green Lady herself and her idea of justice. So if a druid calls up an elemental force of whatever element, because all of them answer to her, then they're drawn into battle to try and win whatever it is back. So the forces of nature, as I just said, are based on all the elements: earth, water, wind, fire, they take in all those that have been shunned from the races or made homeless during different conflicts throughout the history of Panathor, taking in the poor beastmen who feel that they've been badly done to by being merged from being man to beast. You've got your centaurs, you've got the hydras that have been thrown out of their realms, virtually hunted to extinction. So there are so many mythical beings. It taps into the very soul in a lot of people's minds. Now, my original force was made up quite heavily of minotaurs, and I had werewolves, we had centaurs. We used some beastmen, but not very many at the beginning. And we picked up and moved along. The majority was my stampede back in the day, because it was made up of all the little animals that were running around in the forest, being called in by the druids.
Mm, yes, the bears and weasels and various mm-hmm. other creatures.
Yes, yeah. I had every kind of little creature on the bases. I can remember people being quite surprised at seeing some of them. I think one used to get referred to as a teddy bear's picnic quite regularly. And
yeah, that's right. Still upstairs, actually.
Well, it'll be hidden away somewhere, I've no doubt. So are we wanting to break down the different units, or...?
No, not generally. The idea of this episode is basically to give people an overview of the different factions so they get an idea of the flavour, and it might influence their choices when they come to actually building an army, as if to say, well, actually, I heard Bob and Jan discussing that on their podcast, and it sounded like the ideal sort of thing for me, so I'll go ahead and do it.
Oh, that's fair enough. And obviously, as I say, to me, Forces of Nature and the Herd were very much my beginnings. The Sylvankin, I never went down that route. That's far more elven, but I was shunning away from the elves at the time, especially having been dark elf. I know lots of people come into it through Sylvankin and the use of tree herders and such like. We'll come back to those. Maybe you want to discuss a little bit about your ogres, because that was kind of your... Once you got past Kingdoms of Men, I think...
Well, what I'll do is I'll briefly discuss the Order of the Green Lady, because that sort of fits in between the Forces of Nature and the Kingdom of Men.
Yeah.
So the Order of the Green Lady, the idea behind that was when the Abyss flooded and what was originally called the Brotherhood was a group of knights that were dedicated to fighting the Abyss. They took very heavy losses in the war against the Abyss, in the plugging of Helpy's Rift. They lost the vast majority of their forces, were broken and lost all the castles. And at that point, they were looking round for people to be with, places to go, and they split into two different factions, one of which went with the Basileans, and that became the Order of the Brothermark, which we'll deal with in the good faction spiel, and the other became the Order of the Green Lady. These guys are still humans, they are knights, but they're more in tune with the nature. Think of the Green Knight from the Legend of Arthur, Nature's Knight. These are the guys that do that. They are guys that ride on flaying mounts, which is the Order of the Forsaken. They are knights who ride round on traditional horses and fight, and they are foot knights. But in their army list as well, you have a lot of the Forces of Nature things. You have Beasts of Nature in the force list. So they're an amalgamation of human knights and Forces of Nature, which combined can be a quite powerful combination.
Yeah, don't put down those little unicorns.
No, unicorns, winged Pegasus. And the thing,
they might only get 3 attacks, but they do a lot.
Yes, and the thing with things like the winged Pegasi that are in the Order of the Green Lady list, they also appear in the Kingdoms of Men list. The Kingdoms of Men is a list that is designed as a catch-all, because the vast majority of fantasy races are humans. So the Human Kingdoms of Men list is designed for you to be able to fit any type of humans that you want into Panathor. For instance, there's a human kingdom called Sparta, which is quite close, both on the map representation and in name, to Spartans. Everybody's heard of the Spartans, the 300 King Leonidas fighting against the Persians at the gates of hell.
I think also it brought in the fact that there aren't very many human models that Mantic have brought out.
No, the human models are the Basileian.
Yeah, so really it's to try and encourage anybody from other systems who want to come and play the game but hadn't got anything to play it under without, you know, buying a whole new range, to be able to jump in and join in the fun quite quickly.
Yeah. If you've got a 28mm human army, it's really easy to port it across. My first Kings of War army was a Kingdoms of Men army that was made entirely from Lanchnechts, which had painted up for Warhammer Ancient Battles and had been languishing in a box. Kings of War appeared. I just took them out, stripped them off the bases, multi-based them, and lo and behold, every troop type that is in the Lanchnecht army, I found a comparison for in the Kingdoms of Men army. Because every army has spearmen or pikemen, which are just better spearmen. Every army has guys with swords and shields that fight. Every army has cavalry. The chariots are in the list. So you can make anything from a New Kingdom Egyptian army all the way through to the Hungarian Black Army of the 15th century.
And your samurai and everything else.
Whatever your flavour of men, they fit in the Kingdoms of Men list. And it is, pun intended. Yeah, pun intended, it is a Swiss army list. It can be anything you want. Saying that, sort of budding off the side of the Kingdoms of Men is the League of Rhodia. Now, the League of Rhodia is an actual Mantic creation. They have their own place in the map. They are an affiliation of city-states that have joined together to form the League of Rhodia. And originally, they also contained the Halfling homeland, the Shire, which we'll talk about in a minute. But just recently in the lore, the halflings have broken away from the League of Rhodia, or some halflings have broken away. Some halflings still fight for the League of Rhodia, but the vast majority of them fight under their own list. The League of Rhodia is an amalgamation of the Kingdoms of Men list. It takes a lot of its troops from the Kingdoms of Men list. It adds flavour with the halflings that are still in the League. So you have some halfling troop types. Vast majority of them are human troop types, and they have just enough variation, mostly in the characters, to differentiate themselves from the Kingdoms of Men. It's still a human list, it's still neutral, but it has that little bit more flavour to make it unique.
Yeah, a little bit Lord of Rings.
It is a little bit Lord of the Rings. I would more say that it's probably akin to the Holy Roman Empire in Germany in the 1400s, with the Lanchnecht-style guys, the guys riding on the winged arrales, the fact that they're all dukes and barons, and they have war shrines, things like that. It's a bit more, probably a bit Games Workshop Old World style, but the names certainly hark back to that, with Hodenberg and all that sort of thing.
I know very little about them, as I'm quite willing to hold my hands up to admit, as the League of Rhodia never really appealed all that much to me.
Well, I read up on it because I changed my Kingdoms of Men army into a League of Rhodia army, and because League of Rhodia has halflings, I've now started to grow my halfling army.
You've been doing that for a while.
It's organic growth, we'll call it. And that's how the hobby gets you. You pick one thing, you ally in another faction, and before you know it, that allied faction has become 1,000 points, 1,500 points, 2,000 points, and you've got another army.
Or, in the case of us, a old bar two armies.
Yes, well.
It is the way of these things.
It is the way.
Okay. So we've covered League of Rhodia a little bit. You touched on halflings. Do you want to say a bit more about them? Because obviously, they're taking off on their own quite well in the last few years. Since coming out of lockdown, they came in with vengeance, didn't they?
They did.
New list that came out at that point.
With the Halpies Rift, with the rules that came in for that, it introduced the Halflings, because they broke away from the League of Rhodia. There's a really good book about it called Broken Alliance, which introduces Aaron Cadwallader, who's a Halfling character. And it also goes into the politics and the where and whys behind why they broke from the League of Rhodia and why some Halflings stayed. So if you get a chance to read that book and you're interested in Halflings, do. The Halflings live in their own area called the Shire, which is not the most original of names, but it's the one they've chosen. It is a fully mapped out area for the Halflings to live in, and has a background, which is quite nice. The Halflings themselves think more D&D Halflings rather than Tolkien Halflings. They're still the short people.
They still like to eat.
Because a lot of their magic is based around that. It's called gastromancy. But they're more engineers and tinkerers than they are farmers. They still do the farming, but they're also engaged in scientific research and alchemical research. They have big war machines. They have a giant metal war pig that runs around shooting people. They have balloon bombers. They have jetpack guys. They have mowers pushed by trolls. They have troll riding gunners. They have all sorts of stuff. They have very interesting dog cavalry. It's all in all making it a Mantic IP army. It's also one of the most complete ranges, I think. I think they've got everything for the Halfling army is out.
Yeah, it's I think you been can designed, get it as a full
Mantic. You can either buy it or download it from the vault, which is Mantic's source of their STL for their IP stuff. So if you've got a 3D printer, you can buy the basic plastic Halfling kits and you can 3D print all your upgrades, a theme that will reoccur through several armies as we go through the factions. Yeah, but that's the Halflings. They are one of the newer races for Mantic to do, like I say, one of the most complete ranges. They have a very good background, and to be honest, the army is a very good army. It won, and a Halfling army won Clash of Kings last year. So it's one of the newer armies, so it has a lot of synergy within the list. I don't want to go into too much detail because I'll start waxing lyrical about all the different auras and everything like that. And that's not what we're here for.
Previously, people had said it was overpowered and such like. We're not looking at that in this, are we? We're just giving you an overall view. They are and what they're about is kind of the summary of this. Going to be quite a brief, hopefully, podcast. Do you want me to touch on augurs a little bit? And then you can fill in all the gaps that I miss, because I know a touch about augurs, but not a great deal.
Well, if you espouse what you know about augurs, and then I'll see if I can remember.
Well, the main thing that I know about augurs is they're tribal, they are on the steppe, and they roam around and go to the thing. That's an annual get-together of all the different tribes. They turn up, nothing's about money, it's all barter for them, but they, at a point, all seem to come to an age where they decide they're going to go out and prove themselves and become mercenaries and go out and throw themselves into the world for whoever will pay the most and go a bit crazy for money. Yeah, nobody knows what they do with this money. There's many a tale of people going off looking for augurs' hidden treasures, because you never hear of augurs really buying anything. They don't return it back to the tribe, because the tribe has no use for it. They just barter and do jobs in exchange for the stuff that they've got. So they're not returning the wealth anywhere. So disappearing off to get paid as much as possible seems a bit odd. But, you know, if you want to be the mercenary, big, brutish, augury type, they are completely it. They're very hard-headed and, you know, they have thunks. Rather than thinking, they're thunks. It's it's a way of being for them. It's about their general attitude, isn't it? It's just coarse and themselves.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, I ogres is another one of the armies that I've used quite a lot, and I always see them as being the matriarchal society. Like Jan said, they are tribal. They're a society of extremes because not only are there ogres in the ogre army list, surprisingly enough, but there are red goblins. The ogres keep a sub-level of goblins as their servants stroke slaves. The goblins also feature in the army list as auxiliaries. So you have an army list that can include goblins, which are normally evil, but obviously in an ogre army list, they're neutral. So you can have a lot of goblins or just an ogre army. And the reason being, I think, is because ogres are predominantly large infantry. So they,
yeah, they're a unit size regardless, aren't they? There's no real individuals because they're just too big to be an individual.
Yeah, all their characters are large infantry characters because all ogres are. So the red goblins are there to add some cheaper troop types, some chaff and a bit of a backup, I suppose. They have some interesting troop types. They have the Red Goblin Blaster, which is like an exploding war machine, which the Red Goblins have brought with them. They also introduce into the Ogre Army the Red Goblin Slasher, which means that Ogre Armies can have quite a few monsters because they can have giants, mammoths, Red Goblin Slashers. So if you want to do a monster mash, you can. The only problem is
remembering to get them out.
Remembering to... That's never going away very
quickly.
No,
it's never going away.
But the problem you have is the unlocks, which we did explain in the How to Do an Army List episode. So if you don't remember what that is, look in your rulebook or go back and listen to the How to Unlock things. But that's ogres, basically. Mm-hmm. Big, massive dudes who trundle around the steps and then sell their services as mercenaries to everybody because they're neutral. Anybody can ally with ogres. Anybody can hire them, fight for them.
So we've covered everything apart from our little fishy folk, haven't we?
Well, we briefly touched on the Sylvankin.
Do you want to go back and look at those?
Well, the Sylvankin, they aren't quite an important army in that they are a fusion of... Like the Order of the Green Lady is a fusion of humans and forces of nature. The Sylvankin is a fusion of elves. Forces of nature. So it's another good army combined with a neutral army, and it takes troop types from the elves but gives them more of a synergy with the forces of nature stuff. So you've got things like forest shamblers and tree herders fighting alongside elven glade watchers. They have kindred spears, so it doesn't look like much when you're looking at the army list because it doesn't have all the sexy stuff that the full elf list has.
It's
wood elves basically, with the equivalent of dryads in the tree, the forest shamblers and the tree herders would be your tree man. It has a surprising amount of finesse in the army. It's not an ideal army for somebody to just start playing because the synergy between elf shooting and quite fragile but elite elf fighting and high toughness, shambling, surge, shenanigans, forest creatures is a difficult one to master, I would say. But that's only my thoughts on Sylvankin. Other people might think they're easy to do.
I
somebody might
very
have
very pretty.
Yeah, they're very, very pretty. Lots of modelling opportunities, definitely. And if you've got an old wood elf army, then they're ideal. One thing I will say is that I haven't recently seen very many decent Sylvan elf miniatures, because Mantic's miniatures are just elves.
Mm.
So the Sylvan elf version of them is just the elves that Mantic do. Mantic's elf range is quite old.
I've seen them done quite nicely with some conversions where leaf cloaks have been added and similar stuff.
I think so. I think with any army, the modelling opportunity is going to be there. I mean, it's like my dwarfs. The dwarfs are an old cast. The plastic dwarfs are one of Mantic's older ranges. But with a bit of TLC, some shield swaps and some judicious green stuffing, they become all sorts of different things.
I think that's the any hobby, really, that goes into this game. All your hobby time is spent with the old green stuff coming out and a little bit of, I've got this vision in my head, this is what I want it to be. So, yes. Silvenkin wise, beautiful opportunities, just sadly not so many people seem to take them there.
No, I mean, if you're going in with the idea of being a competitive gamer to go to tournaments and win big, they can do, but you won't win very many prizes for all Mantic Army because there's not the full range, although it's getting there. The Dracons have come out.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah. Fish people.
Yeah, the Neretica, or however you say it, for Trident Realms, who were formed by the Dark Smith. Chiron was Lord Chiron, anyway. That's, again, going into the lore and the background of it, but basically they're from three under-the-sea kingdoms and came out onto the land. They kind of tie in and are used a little bit in Forces of Nature because they have a kindred feel to them. They were brought about during a time of the God Wars, forced into being the shape that they are, and shunned and treated badly. So all the lore that goes around them has them quite akin to beastmen and quite happy to be alongside beastmen, which I think is why they do come up in Forces and Nature lists as well. But yeah, you have a lovely fishy feel for this lot. You can get your kraken going. You can take out and about with little... There's tree frogs, isn't there? Well, leaping frogs.
The new Mantic. The Trident Realms is an army that has just announced that it's had a complete overhaul with models being brought out to fill gaps in the existing ranges and new models being brought out, new troop types being brought out to boost the army up into its 2024 version.
They wanted to bring in a lot more of the lakes and stream dwellers, didn't they?
Yeah, frogs who don't live in the sea, things like that.
Yeah, and so obviously you've got almost your merfolk, then you kind of go across to all the cute little things that are going to pop up and like make you scream.
Well,
souls and...
Yes, well, Trident Realms is a specific Mantic IP army, so there won't be much out there, there won't be much out there that is similar overall. There might be fishmen models and things. I know Reaper do fishmen models because I've got some for my Blackie Derms.
There's lots of stuff out there because it's a thing from people's imagination going over years. So if you spot something, I'm sure it's perfectly acceptable to pull it in. But they have got all the range, I think, haven't they? There's not much that they haven't covered in the range.
Deep Ones, I think, is just coming out. They produced them in League of Infamy, but they haven't produced a lot of them.
Well, they're basically going to be your Titan size, aren't they? And
no, they're large infantry.
They're just large infantry, are they? Okay. Because Titan-wise, you can find all sorts out there.
Well, Titan-wise is the Kraken and the Coral Giant.
Yeah, and the Coral Giant is basically everything melded together from the sea, isn't it? The waves accumulate them and draw them together, don't they, for the Coral Giant?
I think so, yes.
I've read about it somewhere.
Yes, the model certainly looks like that.
Well, it's meant to be the energy of the sea drawing all the life into one focus.
Well, it is. I mean, the Trident Realms, again, as Jan was saying, ties in with the Forces of Nature because you have two or three troop types from the Forces of Nature, more specifically Naiads.
Mm.
So you have Naiad Ensnarers, which are the fighting Naiads, Naiad Heart Piercers, which are the shooting Naiads. You also have Water Elementals and Greater Water Elementals, both they share in both armies. But then you get into things like the Giggers, which are large armoured crab guys. You have Nookers, which are great undersea snakes, and the Coral Giant, the Kraken, which are the Titans. You have Trident Kings on chariots. It's a very
Aquaman army.
Well, yeah. I was gonna say it's a modeler's dream, to be honest.
Oh, it is. And very much so.
Especially previous, when not all the range was out, because there were no models for placoderms, there were no models for deep ones, there were no models for nookers. They all came out with the League of Infamy Kickstarter. So now we know what they look like. I mean, I was using other board game miniatures for them for a long time.
Well, we've seen lots of people use other board game miniatures. We've seen stuff from like Dune used for it.
But I mean, because it's a Mantic IP, they went to town with some of the other things. Bulls are a prime example. They are halfling-sized humanoid bodies with an octopus for a head. And
they're so cute.
They run around, and you can almost imagine the funny noise they make. They must be like as they walk around, and they
but on a pair of legs, not on an octopus.
On a pair of legs, yeah, not on an octopus, but and they have arms as well, and they fight, and they also learn magic. Because you have full Mythicans and full Aquamages, and the other characters are naiads.
But we did say we weren't going to go too in-depth into all that. All the neutral stuff, and we've basically said that if you're into your balance and you're having your elements, you've got quite a few that just fall into elemental kind of ranges. You know, you've got your sea range, you've got your land range, you've even got the flying that comes into...
Air elementals.
Yep.
Fire elementals, what would they fit into?
They'd become salamanders, but they are part of forces of nature.
Yes, and then the earth elementals go with the dwarfs, which...
But again, forces of nature, because, you know, being pulled together out of rock and clay, you don't need to think at that point.
Yeah, apart from druids, you can actually produce an entire army made up of the elements,
if you so wish. You just need the odd druid. Preferably with Surge if you're doing it just out of the elements, because they're all very shambly. But anyway, so you've got your elements, you've got your augurs, that are your funkers.
Yeah.
And then you've got humankind.
Yeah, the bog basic humans, everybody.
And the stunty variety that aren't dwarves.
The more characterful, stunty half men.
Yeah.
And then you've got the fish people, which are completely out there and wacky.
But cute.
You've got the Order of the Green Lady, which are half and half human, and the Herd, which are the tortured souls version of forces of nature, because they were subject to dark forces, and then they were rescued, and they've now taken it upon themselves to be the champions of the forest.
They have. You've got your centaurs that run about and do all sorts.
I love centaurs.
I love them, and the guardian brutes. As I said, mine always used to be minotaurs. We still haven't got models for them.
The only thing about centaurs is it keeps me awake at night. They have six limbs, so technically they're insects. They also have two rib cages.
I've posted many pictures of centaurs into the Herd pages on Facebook.
You don't see many of the other kind, do you? The half human, half horse, where it's the
front half's horse.
Yeah, the top of a horse on a human body.
Yeah, no, you don't.
No.
Either which way, we've covered all the ground there.
But what I am going to do, because I decided last minute I was going to do this, and I'm going to actually date this podcast by giving a quick shout out to, because we're supposed to be championing our local scene in the UK, I'm going to give a quick shout out to a couple of tournaments that are coming up. So we have, on the 27th of April 2024, Battles in the Undercroft 3. I believe there are still a couple of places left at Battles of the Undercroft. It's a two-day singles, five games, 2,300 points tournament in Carlisle, run by our friend Dan Barham, who was on the previous podcast. So he's fairly active on Facebook. If you want to go in, if you just put Battles in the Undercroft into search, it'll bring it up. On the 4th of May, there is an ambush tournament, one day singles, four games, 995 points, and that's at Atlas Tabletop Gaming in Gloucester. I believe that's Rich Luke that runs that one.
Yes, it is. Yeah, he's submitted that to the Masters.
Yeah, so I don't know whether that's full or not. I should have looked before I came on, but in true me fashion, I just decided at the last minute I was going to do this. On the same day, there is The Shroud of the Reaper, A New Hope, the Star Wars-themed Kings of War tournament from the mind of Mark Cunningham.
Which is a fantastic mind. I love Mark's
stuff. I have visions of him going into one of them spectrograph things and him being like a Van de Graaff generator. all the ideas coming out of his head as tendrils of electricity constantly striking things.
I think about 3 o'clock in the morning, that would sum Mark up, to be honest, having seen him on tournament weekends.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Add more alcohol and you find that Mark just constantly keeps going with new stuff. Fabulous.
Having sat up with him till God knows what time in the back garden drinking.
I will say, you know, that weekend would be fantastic. It's a shame it's my birthday weekend.
Yeah, but that's a 2 day singles, five games, 2, 3, 4, 5 points.
Nothing up with decent pointage. It gives you something different.
I know,
to play,
but it's
with.
Only 45 points more than the sort of standard. But yeah, anyway, but then we have.
It is a bank holiday weekend that weekend for those that are wondering. Yeah. So it's a 2 day game, but you've got a Monday to recover or travel back from London on.
Yes, it is in Bexley in London. It's about a 3 hour drive from up north for us, wasn't it?
For us, yeah.
So if you're closer to London, it's less than that, obviously.
And if you're further away, then
it's more than that.
Ta-da! Google, it's our friend. Yeah. It usually lies, especially as if you have to pass Birmingham, you never know how long that's going to take.
Yes. And there's a couple more in May. I'll only do May. We'll only go a month ahead.
Mm-hmm.
A new kid on the block with the Battle of the Blood Orange.
Mm-hmm.
An orange-themed tournament on the 18th of May at the TSN Arena in Nottingham for Mr. Andy 2D6 Ransom, the man of orange himself.
Now, that looks to have been filling up quite well from what I've seen, but I think there are still spaces. So, have a look on that there, Facebook. You'll find it.
Yeah, one day singles, three games, 2,300 points.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to find any of these and you're not on Facebook, there is the Masters website, which
www.calmasters.com.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who can remember. Also,
well,
on the
you can listen back.
Yeah, also on the 18th of May is Champions of the Vale at Firestorm Games in Cardiff. One day singles, three games, 2,300 points.
Is that Michael Longman?
Yes, it will be.
Good, good.
And the 25th of May, Kings of War Light the Beacons at Boarding Brum. I believe this is Ainscull Gaming doing this one. So it's in Birmingham, right in the centre of the country. One day singles, three games, 2,300 points. And the following day, the 26th of May, is Kings of War Brighton 3 at the Ye Olde Kings and Queens in Brighton. So if you're anywhere near Brighton, one day, singles, three games, 2,300 points.
You don't necessarily have to be near Brighton. You might just decide you fancy a weekend away in the lovely South Coast.
Well, you could. I mean, you could be in Brighton, you could be in Bournemouth. But then if you are a resident of Bournemouth, then all you're doing is waiting to die.
Now stop it. Come on, we've travelled down to Weymouth numerous times. You wouldn't sit back and say that anybody sat there is just waiting to die.
No, but that's Weymouth, that's not BOMO, is it?
There's nothing up with BOMO. It's got a surf beach and everything. Come on.
Yes.
Get with it.
You have to step over all the prospective corpses in the deck chairs to get to it, though, don't you? It's almost as good as Weston-super-Mare, my favourite town. Right, anyway, it's less of the slagging
off.
Says
the man that has two strings that fall out of the bottom of his trunks, also known as white legs.
Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's May. So if there's any other tournaments in May that we might have missed, they're not on Kings Kings of War Masters page, which is why they've not come up. So get them on there, get them advertised, drop us a line and we'll advertise them on the next podcast.
Yeah. If anybody wants to get in touch, give us any feedback, info, ask us questions, please do. Just drop us an email, PM away, do whatever.
Yeah. Constructive criticism is welcomed. I only cry a little bit in the bathroom when somebody says I've done something wrong.
I'm not commenting whatsoever.
Thank you for the back.
You don't tend to have tears in your eyes while you're looking in the mirror. It does put you off.
Ooh. I might cut that out after I edit that bit out.
Oh, no. I'll be editing this one while you're at work.
Oh, will you know?
Oh, yes.
So, we've done that. Shout-outs. Anything else? Are we going to say what the next podcast is going to be, or are we going to leave it?
Well, the next podcast will either be good or evil. Maybe we ought to throw it out and say, dear listener, what would you like us to cover? Good or evil first?
There you go, you've just done it.
Ta-da!
Well, in that case, then we might as well bid you farewell.
Yep, this witch needs a brew.
Okay, so from the hawk, the...
I shall take that glass of mead off you. And shall we wrap up from the Warriors Hall for this lovely night that outside actually isn't raining currently, and catch everybody very, very soon.
Yes, good night. We hope you have enjoyed the hospitality of our hearth and that you will return to hear more sagas and tales from the Warriors Hall. Farewell, warrior.